This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Etopia Media's Wind Power World. We're about to speak to Stephen Dryden, president of Midwest Renewable Energy Corporation. Welcome to Etopia Media's Wind Power World.
Thank you very much.
We're going to talk about the projects that you've got going there in the Midwest. Tell us a little bit, if you can, before we start on the physics and engineering of this, about the financial structuring of the operations that you're involved with. What companies are involved?
Our company, small development company, we start the initial development, do the preliminary design, almost an architect of putting it together, making sure that it's economically feasible, putting the individual companies together that will own the wind farm, the specific wind farm, and then as we develop it, we bring in partners. We don't have any per se with my own company because I'm the sole owner, but as an individual project gets developed and gets built out, then we bring in more people, more partners, larger groups, up to the point where ultimately it's sold to a utility, for example, that will own it 100%, and that's it. The project goes off and they own it, and I go off doing other projects.
Okay. Now, as a general proposition, do you look around for places with a lot of good wind and good land and access to power lines, or do farmers who own farmland come to you, or what? How do you get together with
the
sites?
That's a combination of both, but it's kind of my experience in being in the business for 10 years, and specifically in wind for the last 6 or 7, but my priority when I look at things is not necessarily the best wind. I look for my target markets and the ability to deliver to them, meaning the transmission grid system. If that's available, I make sure that the lines are there that have capacity available to get the power to them.
Right.
A lot of the, across the country, there's constraints everywhere, and it's useless to go build on the top of a hill with great wind if you just can't get it out.
And what geographical areas do you focus on?
My area right now is specifically in the upper Midwest, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Dakotas.
And as a general rule, how receptive are the farmers who you approach or who are interested on their own in getting involved in this?
When I select an area, I will go and knock on the door of every farmer and see if they're interested. And if I get a very high majority of people that are interested, then I'll put the plan together and then group them together and then present it and ask them if they would like to come on. And if they do, they'll put a signature on a basically a piece of paper that says they're willing to go the next step of seeing whether it's economically feasible and technically and environmentally feasible.
Do you generally work with a single farmer in a single site or with a group of them?
No. All our sites have been 48 to 50 to 60 farmers, pieces of the property. Our each wind farm has been 80 megawatts consuming, spread over about 5,000 to 7,000 acres.
Okay, does putting a wind farm on an agricultural farm have any impact on its ability to raise crops?
No, each turbine. The major land use is the road that gets to the turbine. The turbine is really only 25 feet by 25 feet of land, and after that, it's the road that could stretch as much as a quarter mile, but it's no more than 10 foot wide. If the bigger turbines, you might get up to 16 feet, but that adds up to less than a third of an acre.
What percentage of the wind resources of the Midwest would you say are currently being tapped?
There are, the highest group of people are in the southwest Minnesota area, the Buffalo Ridge, but that now has been over. It's highly congested in transmission. They're having a lot of problems pulling it out. And then also in Iowa, we're in north central Iowa, and there's quite a few wind farms in northwest Iowa, but they too are experiencing the same kind of transmission limitations. And Dakotas, where it's the greatest wind, they're just totally have transmission problems.
Well, let's focus on that a little bit. That sounds like the missing link here right now, is these transmission problems. What kind of transmission problems, and who's responsible, if anyone, for doing anything about that?
Well, the issue is kind of, there's twofold. One's competition. There are existing lines, and so there's just natural competitive use of those lines. And in that location in Dakotas, they're very large coal plants, and the coal plant is base run. And when they are built, a line is built basically with the same size, and they consume about 85-90% of the line. So there's very little room for wind.
When you say room,
room on a transmission line to get to the markets.
And does that tend to be the only transmission line that's available?
Out there in the Dakotas, you either have very big lines coming from very big power plants that come down into the big markets. After that, you go down into the distribution systems, which feeds yours and my homes. And
right.
There's very few homes in Dakotas.
Right.
Compared to, let's say, the East Coast.
Have you gotten involved in any of the politics here? Or
I don't. That's what I mean. I tend not to. I stick with the technical issues, and that's why I locate. There are locations. You just have to very precisely pick them based upon the transmission grid system. That's what we analyze.
Would it at all be feasible or viable from an economic and technical point of view to build additional transmission capacity in places like South Dakota that have so much untapped wind resources?
Yes. I'll say yes, and then there's two pieces to that. Right now, there are definitely lots of locations for small wind farms.
I mean, right.
If you were 20 megawatts, 10 megawatts, things like that, you can distribute them all across the distribution lines and still kind of feed into the system. But the economies, you have good winds, but very low economies of scale for economics. But it's still, the ultimate price is not that bad. Compared to what's the typical wind farm, 100 megawatts, now you're starting to see 200 megawatts, and those are so big that's why you need almost a dedicated line, or you need to be on a very high voltage line. And right now in the Dakotas, they're constrained.
Can you say something about
that? The ideal thing is they need to build some new lines up from the Dakotas if you're going to bring in a huge amount of wind.
Okay. What's the relative cost of producing electricity from coal-fired plants versus from wind farms? As they leave the plant or the farm.
My recent analysis is that coal's still a little lower, but the difference with coal is they'd have a very high capital cost.
Right.
In fact, their capital cost is probably a little higher than wind, running around $1,600 a kW installed. We were lower than that. Now we're kind of jumping up around that number, but their coal price is very low. And so when you look at the thing is, with a coal plant, it can run for 40 years, so you can depreciate it over 40 years. So they're still probably a little bit more economic, but they don't get any, there's no real debit or credit, as you want to call it. There's no penalty for the pollutants that they produce.
Right. In other words, they're getting a free ride on that, essentially.
On that one side. I mean, for me, being a wind developer, I would say that they're just, they're making the electrons, and that's how we price it, and it's kind of the same as wind. We're pricing it, but
but on a everything considered basis, the amortization of the capital investment and the pollution and the health effects
haven't gotten taken into consideration yet. I think it's going to take probably some major lawsuits, which are, you know, we're already seeing from I think it was Massachusetts that sued some power plants in Ohio. So that's been the first one, and I wouldn't doubt it's going to start more. And as those numbers rise, it's just like the nuclear business. All of a sudden, nuclear didn't really know what the cost of their waste was until these things came in. And then all of a sudden, boom, there is a price of your waste. And, you know, coal will probably have the next go around over the next 10 years, the way I look at it.
To belabor the obvious, how much pollution is generated by a wind farm?
We don't do anything with the water. listeners. There's probably, I know there's some numbers I don't have them right handy, but there's some initial ones, of course, with the steel.
Right.
Making the steel.
Right.
Transporting the steel to the farm.
Right.
Those upfront costs, those pollutants right at the very beginning, but once it's up and running, that's it. It's just, we do change the oil once every 6 months, so we change the coolant, and it's just like a car. There's no air pollution, and there's no water pollution, there's no discharges, we don't put heat into the water, or things like that, like thermal plants.
Okay, and how long do you expect the wind turbines that you're erecting now are likely to last?
Well, these ones are utility grade, which should last a minimum of 20 years.
20 years. Could you comment on what some critics of wind power complain about, namely birds flying into them and being having problems?
Yes. I mean, it does come down to the exact location. We've done our studies here. We've done post monitoring, and turns out that our wind farm here's report is one of the best in the country. And I forget the numbers, but something like 29 birds over the last 3 years.
29 birds over the last 3 years. You're keeping close.
And we have 89 turbines.
Right.
And there's some numbers out there floating, something like, I can't remember, it was like 3 or 4 birds per turbine per year.
Right.
And even higher with the bats and stuff like that. So people are using our study in other locations as a representation that there are locations that are good.
It sounds to me you're getting like 1 bird per 3 turbines.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you got to say that was over 3 years, not just
over 3 years. So that's essentially a ninth of a bird per turbine is essentially what you're getting. Could you say something about what?
There's a reason for that. I mean, the main thing is we're way out and there's no trees. We're out in the middle of fields where it's just corn. There's not a natural. We're not near the Mississippi. We're not near the Missouri. We're right in the middle of Iowa. There's very little habitats for large amounts of birds or things like that.
Okay.
There's a real reason when you start looking at the analysis of it.
It's a function of the density of the bird density.
Of bird density,
right.
A function of their flight paths. It's a function of nesting grounds. It's not here.
Any really clever birds try to nest behind the blades?
I haven't seen any.
Haven't seen any of that. Okay. Well, we got a minute or two left. Could you sort of give our listeners a picture about what the obstacles to more and wider deployment of wind power are in your area, and what investors in places far from Iowa who both want to make money and want to support renewable energy can do to get involved in your operations if there are opportunities like that?
If I look across the country, I've been in the business for a while, and I mean, I've gone from one coast to the other, but it's the competitive use of land that why certain projects, if you're on the East Coast and West Coast and you're competing against high rises and things like that, it's going to be very, very difficult and long to get something in. And I'm finding it that it's better to go to places that are easier. My competition is essentially coal and soybeans.
Right.
For a piece of property. And we space them. First, we look at the environmental issues and where we go, and then after that, we look at farming operations, and that's how we finally site. And then our economics is really the last go-round. Out here, there's enough wind, and so I always know the economics are going to be reasonable and even enough for the investors.
So what is it? So what does the decision for the farmer come down to?
As a group, they'll look at it and say, is this something that I want, or do I want an extra stream of payments from what I'm doing? And if main thing is if it doesn't impact my current operations. But these guys out here have been farming for 100 years, and they have everything consistent. They know right down to the gallon of gas they use, and just even coming down and putting a road in can disrupt it. So we do it as minimal as possible. We run it along fence rows or areas where there's no very low crop yields, So we're very concise in where we actually lay out the wind farm. But
okay.
They're against it, they're not against it at all.
And from the point of view of outside investors, are you going to be providing opportunities for them, or most?
Oh yeah. We're talking to them all the time. We've got people coming in, but on a project level, they had their certain hurdle rates, and we've set out, lay out all the costs, and everything matches up. They'll buy.
Okay. Do you want to give some contact information for people who are listening to this and say this sounds like a viable proposition to us, how they can get in touch with you?
Well, they can call me at Stephen Dryden, and just our telephone number is 641-588-3730. We're in Joyce, Iowa, right in the middle of the wind farm. And they can see it on our webpage at www.midwest-renewable.com.
Okay, good. I want to thank you. How's the wind out there today?
It's actually doing very well. Okay. In the middle of the summer. But we had a cold front go through, and it's nice weather, and it's something like 13 mile an hour winds right now. So.
Good. Okay, well, I want to thank you for your
Thanks
work
very
and,
much, Mark.
And for talking to us today. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.